Big deal. And we got like halfway through it. I have it at about verse 15. So is there anyone that wants to take us like 15 through 26 or so?
15 through 26.
I'll go.
Okay.
But you trusted in your own beauty, played the harlot because of your fame, and poured out your harlotry on everyone passing by who would have it. You took some of your garments and adorned multicolored high places for yourself and played the harlot on them. Such things should not happen, nor be. You've also taken your beautiful jewelry from my gold and my silver, which I had given you, and made for yourself male images and played the harlot with them. You took your embroidered garments and covered them, and you set my oil and my incense before them. Also my food, which I gave you, the pastry of fine flour, oil and honey, which I fed you. You set it before them as sweet incense, and so it was, says the Lord God. Moreover, you took your sons and your daughters, whom you bore to me, and these you sacrificed to them to be devoured. Were your acts of harlotry a small matter, that you have slain my children and offered them up to them by causing them to pass through the fire? And in all your abominations and acts of harlotry, you did not remember the days of your youth when you were naked and bare, struggling in your blood. Then it was so after all your wickedness. Woe, woe to you, says the Lord God, that you also built for yourself a shrine and made a high place for yourself in every street. You built your high places at the head of every road and made your beauty to be abhorred. You offered yourself to everyone who passed by and multiplied your acts of harlotry. You also committed harlotry with the Egyptians, your very fleshly neighbors, and increased your acts of harlotry to provoke me to anger.
Thanks, Daddy.
Yep.
That's quite a word picture.
Yeah. So it's kind of a continuation of partly what David was mentioning last week, where the prophet is God speaking to the prophet in a way that's, you know, very graphic, and you know, he doesn't pull any punches. Some of these things are translated in some, you know, kind of nicer ways. You made for yourself male images. You know, you're talking about phallic symbols, essentially what he has in mind when he's talking about that. Of course, he's talking about spiritual adultery, but some of the idols that they made also had connections with fertility rites, you know, so they were obscene symbols that were involved. But you can see here where he's really getting into this whole issue of spiritual adultery or spiritual harlotry. You know, you poured out your harlotry on everyone passing by. You know, this is idea of this complete unfaithfulness. And then again, the theme, like when he gave her stuff like beautiful jewelry or garments or fine flour, oil, and honey, they would take those things that God blessed them with and then use those things to offend God, right? You know, in our day, you know, a good example in our day, it's a little bit different, obviously, because we're not the theocracy of Israel, and this is talking more about religious aspects, but technology, you know, using technology for really violent or occult or sexual immorality, like is done today, right? So the technology and the ability to do the super high resolution graphics and all this is the gift from God, and yet man turns it and uses it to pervert, you know, to do things that are against God's will. And so it's like, well, you know, I've given you this creative ability, I've given you this abilities, and I've given you the, you know, you can't have technology without an extended period of peace, you know, because you have to have all this infrastructure, and peace comes from God. You know, so So you hear, you know, like in the case of the internet and a lot of the technology, at least for in the recent times, America has been one of the leaders of that in the world. And that only came about because, you know, we're a Christian nation and we had the stability and the blessing to be isolated in many ways from a lot of disruptive things that were occurring everywhere in the world. And so with that, we were able to develop, you know, integrated circuits, clean rooms, you know, shipping and all the chemicals, all the different things that are needed, communication, et cetera. And so then what do we do with that, right? We develop all this stuff where we don't honor God. And in fact, we move in directions like the entertainment industry is a good example where a lot of what's, not all of it by any means, but a lot of what is there is essentially co-opted the blessing of God and redirected it in a way that is more of a curse. So he's hitting on, you know, that same theme here. You took this, you took that that I gave you, and you did other things with it that you weren't supposed to do. And then along the line of what did he give them that they did the wrong thing with is he talks about your sons and your daughters.
Mm-hmm.
He says, you have slain, in verse 21, mm-hmm. my children. So they're his.
You know, yeah.
Because productivity and life all comes from God. And so when he, that gets at that whole theme again, that as parents or as a culture, we're responsible, you know, to raise children in a way that, you know, they're ours as far as the family's concerned, but they're really God's.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, you know, like, those of you who are parents that have talked about it before, you know, this whole idea of recognizing how God has made your children and trying to interact with them in a way that enhances that and brings that to the fullness that it can be, because you recognize that, you know, you have them for a period of time and then they're, you know, they're always God's, but you have a period of time to shape them and form them and direct them, but a big part of your responsibility is just to recognize that they're God's and to prepare them that way. But then it says here, you know, you've taken my children and you've slain them. And it talks about, in fact, if you look at there, it says causing them to pass through in verse 21. The phrase the fire isn't actually in right in this particular mm-hmm. passage, but it's talking about them burning their children.
Well, and devouring them.
Mm-hmm. So there's this whole issue of child sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you know, virtually every pagan religion or culture that you actually, if you push very hard and study past the politically correct part of it that you might be seeing nowadays, there's human sacrifice involved, you know, whether it's the Aztecs or the American Indians or, you know, wherever you go. There's always this issue where human sin is such that it always takes things to the ultimate. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know.
You know? So that's partly, you know, when people say things like, well, such and such culture, they never had child sacrifice, but it's not necessarily a godly culture. There's always a part of me that goes, yeah,
mm-hmm.
prove it. because the vast majority of cultures that don't have God's word, sin just pushes and pushes and pushes until it takes things, you know, and even in our culture, which is so highly refined and sophisticated, we have child sacrifice. It's just different.
Yeah.
I hear that, I guess, in the Middle East, I mean, the archaeologists, when they go and dig up these places, they find in a good share of the houses, there's a baby that's been buried in the walls of the house. And it was supposed to be a good luck thing, you know, to get, I mean, to appease the gods,
mm-hmm.
to put the or the god or whoever is added to put your baby in the, kill your baby and put it in the wall, sacrifice your baby and put it in the wall. So it's kind of a grotesque
mm-hmm.
thing. You know?
Mm-hmm. If you look at a parallel passage to this, if you jump over to Jeremiah 7 for a minute. Jeremiah 7:31. Actually starting in 7:30. Remember, Jeremiah is a prophet at this, you know, basically the same period of time as Ezekiel. The same thing's going on. He's prophesying to the same southern kingdom at a time leading to the captivity of Babylon. In Jeremiah 7, verse 30, it says, for the children of... I'm sorry, did I say 7? No, 7, yeah. For the children of Judah have done evil in my sight, says the Lord. They have set their abominations in the house which is called by my name to pollute it. They have built the high places of Tophet, which is in the valley of the son of Hinnom, to burn their sons and their daughters in the fire, which I did not command, nor did it come into my heart. Several things there, though. Notice that they built high places, which are essentially places where the term high places doesn't always mean it's high, mm-hmm. but it has the idea that it's a place that they would commune with false gods.
Mm-hmm.
And so these high places are not just places that they're sacrificing kids, but it has a religious purpose to it, a pagan purpose to it, to a false god. And it mentions Tophet. And turns out that word Tophet basically means roaster, mm-hmm. or place of burning.
Mm-hmm.
And it mentions there the valley of the son of Hinnom. And that valley runs along the west and southern part of Jerusalem, and this is where they used to burn their children. And so in the New Testament, when many of the passages where Jesus talks about hellfire or hell, the word there is, in the Greek, it's Gehenna.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a reference to this valley of the sons of Hinnom, where children were burned. And so the picture of hell that Jesus draws on in the New Testament is basically based on this idea of humans being burned. So he's when he talks about hell and the aspects of hell, you know, like in Matthew 5, a lot of his references to hell there are to this valley of Hinnom, where this child sacrifice would occur. And so in the picture that Jesus is painting, it's a place of perpetual burning of humans. And of course, it's drawing on this idea of this Tophet, this place where they would burn their children. And they have some, also you'll see there's a lot of passages where it talks about Molech, a particular god, that they would offer their children up. And I get this magazine called Bible and Spade, and they have Bible archaeology stuff in there. And apparently the practice of this offering children up to Molech started in, well, as far as they know, in Canaan. It's probably earlier than that too, but they trace it back to Canaan, which is what this is talking about. The Israelites are being influenced by the people of Canaan. And then it went to the Phoenicians and then over to Carthage, and they've done a bunch of excavations over in Carthage, and they've got places where there's just a huge number of remains of babies between 1 and 1.5 months old, way more than statistically should be there for the typical death rate mm-hmm. of children. And there's inscriptions on the places where they're buried, this MLK, which is, it's not Martin Luther King, by the way, it's the same, this word Molk, which is related to Molech, which is a technical word for a sacrifice in fulfillment of a vow. So, you know, it's a lot like what Jerry's talking about. They go back and they do these digs, and, you know, there's all these people that try to deny that it's actually what it really is. And there's other people saying, no, it's definitely this huge practice of child sacrifice.
They dig up these statues of Molech in there. It's metal with the back carved out for building a fire in it, and they would lay their babies on the arms of Molech, and on Molech or whatever it is. It's their way of abortion, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this whole picture and this whole business of child sacrifice. You know, it's odd. I mean, sometimes I've had believers come to me and say, is this really about child sacrifice? You know, they just don't believe that the Bible's talking about real child sacrifice. It's like, yeah, even in Israel, so there's passages we could go to where the kings, you know, are offering their kids up in this whole thing. You know, so, you know, there's all, you know, it's easy for us to sit in our culture and look at this and go, well, that's really dumb that they would offer their kids up to some false god, right? But then look what we do, you know, which is really, what is really dumber, convenience or believing in a false god?
Well, I think it was probably both back then.
Mm-hmm.
But, I don't know how many millions of babies we've sacrificed here for convenience sake.
Mm-hmm. You know, and there's this whole argument that, well, it's better for them to be dead than if they're unwanted. I mean, it's just like, it's a huge topic, obviously, yeah. but you can see in this passage, you know, and it's so weird because, I mean, it is a little bit rare, but you will run into Christians who do think that God is okay with abortion. I mean, it's hard to believe, but you will. You know, and when you see passages like this, they, in their mind, they just, well, this is different. This is different. This is like offering it up to a false god, and it's already born, right? So in their mind, it's like completely different, because if it's not out of the womb, it's different.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see, you know, it's just so easy as Christians or anyone, you know, when you're, our tendency to rationalize sin is just so strong. And you just have to remember sometimes when you run into somebody that you know, I remember having a discussion with my father-in-law, or Debbie's stepdad, and he's you know, on a lot of things we're on the same page. He's not a Christian, but on a lot of things we're on the same page. He's fairly conservative and so on. And, you know, we're kind of right on the same page until we get to abortion.
Mm-hmm.
And then, boom, he's like completely off in a different view. And you just know that somewhere in the back of his involvement with his previous wife or his daughters or something, he's condoned an abortion.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, all of a sudden, is different.
Mm-hmm.
And you just start to see how as individuals or as people or even Israel here, just this whole, because we've seen this picture that they're in the temple, they're doing all this stuff that's supposed to be, you know, they think somehow they're still, you know, they haven't like totally forsaken the temple and given up. They're still doing things that they think somehow is pleasing to God, and then they're mixing it with stuff that's completely inconsistent. And that, you know, the capacity for us to be deceived and rationalized, I think that's one of the things that we take away from this is, you know, aside from the fact that we look at it and go, well, this is horrible. We see similar things in our own culture, but just as individuals, you know, we have to look at these and go, well, look, you know, how could, you know, couldn't I get into a position like that if it weren't for God's grace, or if I didn't stay in His Word, how easy would it be for me to drift away too?
Yeah, the scary thing is that we all have the capacity to do that.
Mm-hmm.
All these things that are going on. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way you can even... pointless to discuss, you know, what their mind... You know, just your average person in that time, what their mindset would be. But it's so opposed to... God has made parents to just protect that child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they put their own life... for that child, just naturally innate God-given care, you know, and so to go so, you know, that somehow either it's just religious leaders that are domineering or just the common person is so flipped there, that's, you know, I would never, you know, that's pretty bizarre.
Well, like, yeah, when you see, you'll see women in particular, and I'm picking on them because they're the ones that will hold a sign that say, "Keep your laws off my body."
Yeah.
And it's you can see where they're coming from, where that comes from, what they're thinking, but it's like, what about that other body? Mm-hmm. You know, it's not your body.
Mm-hmm.
That other body in you isn't your body.
Well, just as as a man married to Mary, and she's got a little baby cooking in there, you know. And I probably wasn't the most, I was not really attached until there it was, mm-hmm. boom, and I could actually see and touch and mm-hmm. feel. But it was just different because I mm-hmm. was, maybe it's just I lacked something in there, but it was not the same until it was born,
mm-hmm.
That's neither here nor there, but
yeah. So there's this whole thing that I can't speak to because I don't know enough about it. But God has engineered women, especially, to be caregivers and to want to protect
mm-hmm.
the child, and so just to see how now in the it's a little bit different, but it reminds me of some aspects of pornography too, where there's this thing that's like incredibly damaging to women, and yet there's some significant number of women that are wanting to protect it, which is a weird thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even pornography, mm-hmm. you see that.
Yeah.
And so it's like Satan has gets us in such a goofy state that the very thing that is damaging us, we're fighting to uphold.
Yeah, yeah.
Just like when God says, I am the God of life, living, I give you eternal life, I give you all these good things, and it's all free. It'll cost you everything, but it's free.
Mm-hmm.
And people just ran and rave against God. They don't want anything to do with God. And so here's this being, this infinite being who has nothing but good and wonderful things, and people rage against mm-hmm. him, And it's just like...
Makes no sense.
It just is so turned upside down from what it should be. And here as Christians, or all through history, as Christians, people have gone forth to try and, offer people this reconciliation, ministry of reconciliation, as it's called in the New Testament, and they're hated for it, by and large. Like Jesus said, if they hate me, they'll hate you. But it's just, God just must just shake his head so much, because it's just like, here's this ultimate, in every turn, there's all this blessings and stuff he has, and we just constantly, we don't want anything to do with it. And it's just like, wow. It would be so good if people would just quit fighting against me. I'm sure that's what he's thinking, Any other thoughts on this passage before we move further forward? So who wants to... Well, maybe I'll write it. I'll do it. Since it's short, I can jump in and do it. I'll go maybe through 35 or so. "Behold, therefore, I stretched out my hand against you, diminished your allotment, and gave you up to the will of those who hate you, the daughters of the Philistines, who were ashamed of your lewd behavior. You also played the harlot with the Assyrians, because you were insatiable. Indeed, you played the harlot with them and still were not satisfied. Moreover, you multiplied your acts of harlotry as far as the land of the traitor Chaldea, and even then you were not satisfied. How degenerate is your heart, says the Lord God, seeing you do all these things, the deeds of a brazen harlot. You erected your shrine at the head of every road and built your high place in every street. Yet you were not like a harlot because you scorned payment. You're an adulterous wife who takes strangers instead of her husband. Men make payments to all harlots, but you make your payments to all your lovers and hired them to come to you from all around for your harlotry. you are the opposite of other women in your harlotry because no one solicited you to be a harlot in that you gave payment, but no payment was given you. Therefore, you are the opposite. I don't know what more you could say, right? I mean,
payment,
it's like
the payment thing. Does that have to do with the fact that Israel was going to Egypt or Assyria and paying them money to help protect them against Syria or other places that were Babylon or whatever? In Babylon, probably this case. I know they went to Egypt,
mm-hmm.
and offered them payment to protect them, and I think they did the same thing with Assyria.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what this is talking about?
I think it's likely that there's a reference to it in there. Yeah, that it's referring to this whole business of, you know, like when you talked about in 26. You've committed harlotry with the Egyptians, your very fleshly neighbor, and there's this whole business of passages where it talks about leaning on Egypt, which is like a sharp spike that goes through your hand, mm-hmm. and the whole picture of instead of them looking to God,
right.
turning to their pagan neighbors for protection. So, I would see definitely an allusion to it, if not more, even.
Yeah, I mean, it talks about merchants, it talks about square, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I'm thinking the square are not just a marketplace, but like politics, maybe. I suppose in this context it's only talking about markets here.
Yeah, I think it's mostly talking about markets, a setting here, open markets.
Verse 31.
Mm-hmm.
And it talks about money. I think I don't know what Cherry's saying too about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, paying them to protect you.
Mm-hmm. Right. And part of that was this whole business, too, of horses and chariots, getting horses and chariots, which God had said all the way along to the kings that you weren't supposed to have horses and chariots. And right off the bat with Solomon, mm-hmm. you see it as a major thing. So it's just this idea of depending on the, quote, arm of the flesh instead of God.
On other nations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's just, you know, this sort of a message. I mean, yeah, it's in the Old Testament, but you kind of wonder, you know, if God wanted to give a message like this today, where would he go to be able to give a message like this? He wouldn't make it on any Christian TV or radio station.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, so, you know, aside from the fact that there's this big positive spin on things, right, where anything negative people don't want to have on in a Christian forum, but just the whole idea that God can speak pretty frankly.
Yeah.
Would this apply nowadays to someone who has a problem and they try to do it in their own strength rather than going to God with prayer for it?
I think the principles, yeah.
That would apply.
Yeah, when it talks about all the scriptures written for our learning, you know, I think what you can see when you go back and look at these settings in the Old Testament is, you know, there's levels. The first level is, okay, what was the actual setting and the meaning, which has to do with Israel and their covenant relationship with God. And then you drop down and there's lessons for nations and cultures. And then you drop down and there's lessons for individuals.
Yeah, because I do that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I my immediate thing is to figure out what I can do to fix the problem, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, it's something that I've always done, and probably
I don't think you're alone in that.
Probably.
Probably
but no. I don't feel
yeah,
too
God's
bad.
Not too happy. Yeah, I don't think he's too happy with things like that. I think we're supposed to go to him.
Yeah. I look at it and there's these two issues. One is, well, did we do it with God's priorities? You know, did we recognize our dependence on him? But beyond that is, you know, are we learning too?
Yeah.
And, you know, we're not going to get it right all the time, but hopefully as we continue in our walk with God, we'll do it differently the next time the same situation comes up. You know, that's the
maybe.
Idea. Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. But I think that's, you know, that's that whole issue too, that this undervaluing prayer, for example, or just a time of being in God's presence, because you know, and especially in our, you know, it's you know, I don't know, it's definitely a cultural thing in the United States too, and maybe most Western countries, that, you know, self-made men, right, and women, but you know, movers and shakers, right, and so, you know, there's this whole, it's even, you even see it when you read quote job descriptions for pastors, you know, if you see churches that are looking to fill the pulpit or whatever, and you read what they're looking for, it doesn't, you know, a lot of it sounds like a captain of industry and someone who's just going to go make things happen. It doesn't, you don't see them talking about humility, dependence on God, man of prayer, you know, I mean, those things are mentioned in passing because they know they got to put them in there somewhere they're supposed to. But when you look at really what the focus on, you know, you've had to taken a church and grown it from this to this, and you've had to have this many people in the church as members, and, you know, it's basically a typical CEO style deal, and it goes like exactly against what you're talking about.
Yeah. Goes against what it should be. Actually.
Yeah. So for sure, there's this whole business of being dependent on God and not turning to other sources. You know. I mean,
I was just going to say, if you had something that needed to be done, instead of praying, you go and ask somebody else how do you get it fixed, you know, or would you come and fix it for me or something like that, you know. I mean, that might even be worse, I don't know.
Well, yeah, and so there's a balance there too, because there is wisdom and resources that God gives us to help us, you know, and some of those come from other people in your congregation that know how to do that thing, whatever it is, right?
Yeah,
but kind of like people who, or let's say churches that get into a building fund type thing. And then all of a sudden, they're doing, let's say they're doing it right, and then everybody agreed, and their people are giving willingly, but what they come up against is the city ordinance, and says, we don't want you to build this thing here, and it's out of your control. Now, are we going to get our lawyers and start fighting them things, or are we going to pray about it? You know what I'm saying? That's what I'm talking about. Because I'm not saying building a building is wrong, but sometimes the way they go about it is. But I'm talking about where you got a bunch of people and you're saying, okay, give what you want to give. And then you got this, then you come up with something that you cannot handle. It's out of everybody's control. And what do? You know, and like I said, a lot of them will get their lawyers out and let's go fight them in court. Not the right way. Not first, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, that's where the true test comes, both individually and, you know, as a church or whatever, is when you run into situations that don't go the way you want. And it's like, you know, how much is it your own will that you're just going to push your way? I mean, it's willfulness, right?
Yeah.
There's this whole issue of willfulness and being willing to let go of things, and even if God gives it back or brings it about another way, just, you know, because when you really look at a lot of this, it has to do with willfulness. You know, when you factor out the money, the influence, all the different things, chariots or not or whatever, you know, a lot of it comes down to recognizing God's sovereignty and being open to allowing Him to do things differently than what we want. And saying, okay, God, you know, this isn't what I really want, but I'm okay with it. If it's what you want, I'm okay with it.
Well, and for, and it's recognizing, I mean, everyone's different. We all have our a common yet unique relationship with God. I know when He's telling me something, you know, like if I'm setting out to do something, I'm pretty sure God's behind it. But you know, if I run into two or three bizarre blocks, like, okay, that's weird, you know, then it happens again. For me, you know, in 12 or however many years, that God is saying, okay, stop. Talk to me about this, you know, just sit down back and wait. You know, that's because I, you know, we all have that with Him. He talks to us in certain ways, and, you know, and if you're in charge of a big giant building, all of a sudden you're running into these blocks here, there. For me, I go, okay, we need to just chill here for a while. Someone else might not see it that way. They just, mm-hmm. Well, God is testing my perseverance. They might rationalize it some other way,
right.
Which may or may not be the case.
Right.
You know, that's,
mm-hmm.
You just have to be sensitive to how God has wired you and your relationship with Him. You know, none of them you can prove mathematically.
Right.
I can't prove to you that God is saying that to me.
Right.
You know.
Well, I think the other thing that we automatically go to too often too is that, oh, well, it's opposition, Satan, or it's opposition, and we're not open enough to the idea that we don't know the mind of God.
Yeah.
You know, we think we do know the mind of God to some certain degree. We think, you know, if I do X, Y, and Z, and you know, these things, none of them are unbiblical, then anything that diverts this thing can't be God. And
yeah.
It's like, so you hear believers a lot of times treating situations as if it's adversary.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. When it could well be just God, and you
mm-hmm.
just don't know God's mind on this thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think sometimes there's a lot of presumption.
Yeah.
It's just like when natural disasters, you know, when you look in the Bible, it says it's a fallen world. When you look in the Bible, it says God has His hand in judgment doing all sorts of things to different nations and settings. You have both of those things in there. And yet when something happens, we're just so quick to say, well, God's judging this nation.
Mm-hmm.
God's doing this, God's doing that. Well, we don't really know, you know. So that comes back to our lives as well. Like you're saying, you think you're going in some direction and something happens, you know, it's better, I think, to pay attention and to be willing to wait on God. Because, you know, more often than not, and again, a cultural thing, we're kind of trained and raised in to just go make things happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you look at the Bible, it spends a lot of time trying to teach people to wait on God. You know, it's a bigger theme. It's a bigger
yeah.
theme in the Bible to wait on God than to run out and make everything happen.
But then on the other side of it, if my garbage can is overflowing in the kitchen, I don't need to pray to God to ask Him if I should take that out.
That's
right.
Yeah, that's the other side.
If the dipstick shows no oil in my car,
yeah.
I can put the oil in, no prayer necessary.
Yeah,
right?
In fact,
so
the dipstick is telling you more than just the oil.
Yeah.
It's telling
yeah.
you where the dip is.
So, and finding that,
says
the dipstick's
not going all the way down.
Right. You know what I mean? Where's that to where, kind of what you're talking about, where something's happening, you know,
right.
something pretty major in your home, you know, then you have to find that
right.
balance of, okay, I really,
yeah.
you know, I don't need God's help to take out the trash.
No.
I mean, He gives me legs. He
yeah.
gives me a trash
right.
can. You
right.
know, but you
right.
know what I mean.
But
well,
conversely
sure.
to that, though, isn't it true that God doesn't really honor the things of the flesh, done in the flesh?
Well, I think it depends on what you call done in the flesh. I mean, when you have a situation I think biblically, yeah, in
I'm
the flesh he won't honor.
Taking trash out,
yeah, yeah, he doesn't honor things done in the flesh. Absolutely, I mean that's real clear. I mean all through Scripture it talks about that, right? The arm of the flesh, this whole business of, and that's why all the stuff that man, you know, like making the altar or, you know, sandals, or, you know, everything that man puts his hand to and puts his will to and stuff. It's kind of God says it's defiled, because the will of man just goes out and does what he wants. So that whole theme, that whole theme is in there, but you do, it's like on the one hand, there's many believers that aren't open to the fact that God has a totally different idea than what they think is God's will, and then the other end of it is this whole business of waiting and praying on stuff that you don't need to wait and pray on. God's already told you.
Yeah.
The principles are clear.
Yeah.
You know, and yet, you know, people will, you know, it's almost like divination where God has set some principles there and you're free to make decisions based on those principles, and yet people want to force God into revealing his secret will to them before they'll do something, and that's not exactly, you know, he's not going to reveal his secret will to you. It's secret, right? He has these principles and he's told you these are these principles, and so like, you know, something like the garbage can's full and overflowing and the neighbors are calling the health department, and it's ruining your Christian witness.
Yeah, you got rats
crawling. There must be something in Proverbs about taking up the garbage.
Bro.
If we look hard.
Well, David would know if it's in there.
He's probably a guru. Wrong word.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
So I think probably the mundane stuff is all taken care of in here. If we know what's
yes,
in the Bible.
Sure.
Why? You know, keeping their house clean or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know that type of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
no, I agree with you.
You know, or paying bills. You know?
Yeah.
That,
I mean,
that's in the Bible. That's for sure. So it's we've got a roadmap to follow. I was just thinking that if we have God involved in everything we do, then we probably don't have that problem so much. You know, we ask him, you know, come on, Jesus, help me fix this engine or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's kind of an offhand way of saying it, but it seems like we're supposed to have him involved in everything that we do, which I don't.
No, I don't either. It's you know, it's hard to remember.
Yeah.
You know, you get carried away and distracted, and I mean that's something that Sid's always talking about.
Yeah.
Even you know,
if I think about it, then half an hour later it's gone. So,
but I think though, if you keep him involved in every little thing, then when the things that come up and hit you sideways, where you're not ready for, it's easier to ask him because you're already got a in a sense a habit. That's be the first place you go, because there are things that hit you and you're going, okay, I wasn't expecting that one. Now, and then you're not going into neutral for so long, because every one of us, when you get inside, we just kind of like sit back and go, okay,
sure,
what do I do? And then you start thinking of your option. And then you're thinking of the wrong option, because the good option, you kept it over here for so long. If you kept it right there, that would have been the first option that you probably would have went for, more than likely.
That's why I go to the hardest thing first. That's why I go to the hardest thing for hardest way to fix something. Whatever's the hardest, that's what my mind thinks about first.
Yeah, on its way around.
It's almost inevitable.
I probably told very briefly some of you, but I had a little water leak last summer, right? I could hear under my house because my access, my crawl space is right by the deck, and I heard this drip, drip, drip. Where's that coming from? So I'm under there looking, and I can't see what trace the water where it's coming. And so I ended up cutting a hole in the side of my house by my shower to see, because it's coming right under where the tub was, right?
Yeah.
Big old hole. And it turns out it was just a little pinhole in All I had to do was open the cupboard, because we have a water that goes to the fridge, that feeds the fridge. Right? All I had to do was open it. It took me, once I got the parts, 5 minutes to fix it. I still haven't fixed the hole in my house. I mean, the plywood's back up there. That's success. You know, if I would have just done that first, or prayed about it, Lord, show me this so I don't cut a hole in my house for no reason. If I would have done that, he would have. Probably.
Yeah.
So, you're not alone in that.
Yeah. Well, there's this whole issue too. But there's this whole issue.
You're not alone on that.
No. Retooling how you think about things, because you know, before you're a Christian, if you come to Christ later in life, you know, you're programmed to operate completely differently.
Yeah.
And so, it's just like automatic.
Yeah.
You know.
Yes.
And so you have to catch yourself, and you know, it's just one of those things that you have to just more and more realize. And it can be, you know, it's even frustrating sometimes when you're talking to other people who, you know, they expect you to have a 7-year planner, you know, and all this kind of stuff, and you just like, you don't have that kind of a mindset anymore. And sometimes people can confuse your dependence on God and learning to be more biblical with just being listless and not goal-oriented.
Absolutely.
You know, and there's just a sense where you're more open to whatever God wants to do.
Yeah.
You know, you know, because you realize more and more when you have all this, you have all your own plans. Well, that's not necessarily God's plans. Your plans aren't necessarily God's plans.
Amen.
So you have to be willing to be open to not doing your plans. Because you don't own yourself anymore, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's the issue where, when I said a little while back, I said, you know, reconciliation with God is free, but it costs you everything. I mean, it is free, but it costs you giving up your life. I mean, that's essentially what it's teaching. If you're going to be a disciple of Jesus, you have to be willing to give up your life. And part of that is being convinced. I think the way that he gets you there is he shows you, after a lot of resistance, little by little, that's the best life you can have.
With the Jews, just after they entered the Promised Land, they came up and had some of these other guys, they knew the Jews were going to take it, so they came and with their hat in their hand, and they muscled their way in, and the Jews didn't ask anything. They just went ahead and made a deal, and it turned to backfire on them. And all they had to do was ask God, what we want to do with these people.
So it's a big topic. And I mean, all of us, I think, you know, one of the biggest issues that all of us have as Christians, and I mean, David and I have talked about it a lot too, is just the will of God. You know, how do you interact with the will of God? How do you discern it? And what are some of the kind of ruts, or you know, bowling, what do you call it, on each side of the deal, gutters that you can fall into there, that it's easy to get kind of discombobulated about the will of God, to where, and you don't really realize it, you know, until if you spend more time with different Christians, you realize that a lot of things people are talking about, and a lot of things that they're, how they're interpreting the world and everything else, when you really boil it all down, it's coming down to what's your perception of the will of God?
Mm-hmm.
How does God interact with us day to day? And, you know, how are we supposed to interact with God and discern the will of God and all that? And it's a huge topic, but it's one that, you know, everyone is dealing with as Christians.
Yeah.
So definitely a big thing. Well, should we go further?
Yeah.
So who wants to do like 35 through 43?
I'll do that. Now then, O harlot, hear the word of the Lord. Thus says the Lord God, because your filthiness was poured out and your nakedness uncovered in your harlotry with your lovers and with all your abominable idols, and because of the blood of your children which you gave to them, surely, therefore, I will gather all your lovers with whom you took pleasure, all those you loved and all those you hated. I will gather them from all around against you and will uncover your nakedness to them, that they may see all your nakedness. And I will judge you as women who break wedlock or shed blood are judged. I will bring blood upon you in fury and jealousy. I will also give you into their hand, and they shall throw down your shrines and break down your high places. They shall also strip you of your clothes, take your beautiful jewelry, and leave you naked and bare. They shall also bring up an assembly against you, and they shall stone you with stones and thrust you through with their swords. They shall burn your houses with fire and execute judgments on you in the sight of many women. And I will make you cease playing the harlot, and you shall no longer hire lovers. So I will lay to rest my fury toward you, and my jealousy shall depart from you. I will be quiet and be angry no more, because you did not remember the days of your youth, but agitated me with all these things. Surely I will also recompense your deeds on your own head, says the Lord God, and you shall not commit lewdness in addition to all your abominations.
So we get back again to that theme that you see so often where God says, well, I've been speaking to you through my prophets, you know, and through the priests and prophets, and you're not listening to me, so I'm going to talk to you through other people, other nations.
Yeah.
And so when he talks about gathering these lovers to come against her, you know, it's this whole idea that he's going to use the very ones that she's turning to judge her. And it's kind of like that passage in Revelation where God puts it into the minds of the kings to burn Babylon, you know, destroy the city of Babylon. you know, and these are the passages that for me they're hard to read in our own time, because you know I don't often get down to the individual application, because I start with the Israel situation, you know, the actual real context and everything, but I get, as soon as I jump down to the context of cultural teaching and of a nation that supposed to follow God, then obviously I think about the United States, right? Because that's where I live.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I look down and I go, you know, how, you know, it's just hard to read these kind of passages and not think about just the way that our culture, how we're ignoring God's teachings on every front. And when you see these passages, you just know that, you know, at some point, you don't know where, that's where you can't, you know, you don't know the tripwire and everything, but at some point, you know, God will intervene to bring you around to the knowledge of what's right and wrong. And if he can't get your attention in more reasonable ways, then he just turns to things that are increasingly harsh, you know?
Yeah.
And you just think about all, you know, and again, I'm not a prophet or know any of this sort of stuff, but I'm just saying, you just see some of the trends, like, you know, when we, just to pick one, where we give China most favored nation trading status, even despite all this stuff going on there, and then more and more of all our tech production has moved over to China, right, to where when it comes now to things like actually doing high-tech production in a real reliable way in mass production, like iPads, iPhones, you know, it's all done in China, right? And so, and still you've got a country over there where the fundamental philosophies of the country are completely opposed to a democracy and the ideals that drive a democracy, and yet they're like our big, huge, close business partner that has this huge amount of money now that owns, you know, a lot of the property here and doesn't have a huge debt like we have, you know. It doesn't take anyone very brilliant to just look at that and go, how easy would it be with us, you know, turning and depending on that so much, how easy would it be for God to just turn around and say, well, I'm going to put a little glitch in that, you know, how big of a glitch would it take? Just some leadership over there that has more, is stronger idealism than financial drive, you know? Because like right now, the thing that keeps it all happening is everyone's making big money. But if you, you know, anytime you look at history, there's always regimes and people that come to power that they actually don't care as much about money as they do about some particular belief, and they want to push it through. It could be power, it could be other things that they want. But, and so it'd be so easy just to tweak that a little bit to where all of a sudden the very people we're involved with that are allowing this to all occur could just easily be used completely against us, you know. And so those are some of the things that, you know, that jump out to me when I see this. I'm looking at the context of Israel specifically and what God has said, but at the same time, you know, when you read, and again, I don't believe in replacement theology, but when you read some of the documents of the early Americas where they believed this was a new Israel, you know, coming to a new Israel in the new world, and for all the different things you can criticize about that, they definitely had this view that they were establishing something that was going to honor God and be a work that was spawned out of a desire to serve God.
Yeah, that doesn't enter into anything. When I read this, I think, well, this is amazing because this is a theocracy here, you know. Well, it was a theocracy, but now it's ruled by kings in this particular stage of the game. But it's like it doesn't quite fit with a democracy.
No.
Where we're multi-ethnical and mm-hmm. everything. I mean, we've got all the religions here. We got all the everything here.
Mm-hmm.
From Satanism to everything, you know, and
mm-hmm.
we've got a country that's ruled by money, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Now we don't have we have leaders that are ruled by money, and so I realize that we will be judged because we're going deeper and deeper mm-hmm. and deeper yes. into mm-hmm. into, you know, bad stuff, you know. I mean, and God's not going to put up with that. But I think the whole world is going deeper and deeper and
yeah.
deeper into everything. And I do believe the end is coming soon. But I can't relate to what I'm reading. Mm-hmm. When I'm reading about Israel, I can't relate that to the United. Maybe at the beginning.
Yeah.
Maybe at the beginning it was more so. But
I think it depends how far back you go. I mean, you know, for sure at the beginning it was, you know, and I'm not trying to say that we've followed God closely for the last 50, 60 years, but there's still, you know, and I haven't studied law, but I've listened to a lot of teaching by Andy Woods, who's a lawyer. I mean, he's got a law degree before he went to seminary. And one of the things that I found valuable from his perspective is the combination of a real strong background in law with a strong background in Bible. And so he's able to see the foundation of law, how it's so founded on the biblical principles that were originally part of our nation, that people don't just, they just don't realize how the United States is absolutely founded on Christian principles. And then the second aspect of that is that the way that law is being perverted and the ways that people are reinterpreting law, those same principles are happening with the Bible. So there's a lot of parallels there. But when you look at that, you do come, you know, there is an aspect in which the United States is given, you know, more verbal assent to God than actual action. But on the other hand, when you actually look back and, you know, it's like when you look at the world, it's full of godless nations, but some are less godless than others. And so, you know, you have to kind of remember sometimes as a Christian, when you look out there, you just look like, man, it's just a giant mess. But there are degrees. And so, you know, there are things that our nation has had that I think it's pretty hard to argue they didn't come about from acknowledging God at some level. And even though we're far along the road away from that, you know, I just look at these situations and I go, wow, you know. You know, it's just like when you see Israel and they were so turned against God and that, you know, he eventually left. Well, we don't have him in a temple here, whatever, mm-hmm. but there's still this principle that, you know, if you push hard enough, he's a gentleman, he'll leave, right? And it's like, it's a scary thought to see that whole thing. And especially to realize that a lot of the freedoms and abilities that allow us to reject him in principles are the very things that would only came about because it was founded with these ideas. Yeah. Like you mentioned, religious plurality, yeah. right? I mean, you know, there's very few places on earth that have as much plurality as Christian nations, right? Or ones that had Christian principles because they believe in freedom of conscience, right? So that's also the downfall.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
With this sinful man.
Well, it's like Israel. And the judges, when they had a good judge, everything was going great. You'd get a bad judge, and man, they'd fall in the tank. And that's what's happening now. I mean, at this stage of that we're reading about, you know,
mm-hmm.
we have bad leaders. They have bad leaders, and all of a sudden they're mixing all kinds of things in with their religion, and they're turning to other sources besides God, and that's kind of the way we are too. At the beginning, we had good, godly people mm-hmm. that were leading the country, and I could say we were more godly than that. I mean, as a whole, because principles were there. But now, it's like we have people that.
Leadership,
I think, in a country is. You said that. That's why God punishes the kings and the leaders mm-hmm. more. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, everybody suffers, but they're the first ones to suffer, and I think that happens to us.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, in our country, they're still at the seventh inning of baseball games saying "God bless America." Mm-hmm. I just heard it a couple times. You know. Right, the very same thing. They're still, you know, we're turning away from God on every level, yet we're feigning that we still, you know, still being sung, you know, it's weird. You know?
Yeah, but they did take it out of the schools. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't teach it anymore. And the parents don't teach it anymore.
Yeah.
You know
what that thing about in D.C., it was said that when it was the final school, which I didn't even know anything.
It was in Abbotsford, I think it was.
Yeah, it was Abbotsford, which district. Has a lot of Christian concerts up there. But it was when the last school.
They were addressed. And this is what's interesting. The guy who's the head of the humanism group wrote to the school district, you know, you've been giving out Gideon Bibles.
That's right, on campus.
And we don't want to see that happening anymore. So of course, they succumbed to that. And the thing is that, you know, whatever, it's a huge topic, but the thing is there's this goofy idea that humanism and atheism isn't a religion.
Yeah.
Right? So you get rid of all religions And then you're religion free. No.
Yeah, right.
No, you've actually now embraced a religion that's anti every religion, and it's humanism. And it's atheism and humanism wrapped up together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you get this ridiculous stuff where we're in now, where every time you try to do something that's Christian, then the Satanists come along and want equal time. Mm-hmm. Well, we want to pray in the assembly at the state legislature or whatever, right? There was a time where that would have just been laughed out. But now it's like, oh, well, we have to give everyone equal time, so therefore we have to shut out everything.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you shut out everything, what do you have? Atheism, humanism.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what now?
Which is a fool's religion.
Which is a fool's religion.
Well, what surprised me about this situation was BC, as far as I knew, was like we were. I mean, when I was over in Arlington, which would have been 93, you could not, the Gideons wanted to, you know, give the Bibles out as the kids walked away from school, off campus. But you had to be off campus.
Mm-hmm.
So I was shocked that in BC there was still one particular school or district that was allowing... that they were actually giving them out from the superintendent's office to the elementary kids on campus. That's right. But obviously now, originally, like we are.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I mean, they're sitting there with, you know, pastors in jail with all the other stuff. So I thought, well, gosh, you know, I thought they were ahead of us in departing from God.
Yeah.
And this...
Well, I think what it shows is when you have a locale, whatever, where there
like
are godly people still there, they'll just continue to practice what they can until they're told not to, which is we would do the same, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's the big thing behind all of this is this whole business of, you know, the whole idea of separation of church and state was that the state would not enforce a particular denomination of belief. It was not that the state would not be Christian, you know, or have Christian influence or even uphold Christianity. It was that the state wouldn't mandate a particular type of Christianity. That was the idea behind that whole thing. And now it's been taken to the point where it basically is being used to justify complete secularism of everything having anything to do with government, schools or whatever. And that's not at all what the original founders did. If you look what they did, even when they were starting, you know, they did all kinds of things that are direct contradiction to this interpretation.
Yeah.
So you got, and this gets back to this whole business again of people that they look at the Constitution as a living document, just like people look at the Bible as a living document. Well, I know Jesus said this, but this is what it means.
And what the Establishment Clause is, it says that the government cannot establish a religion.
Right.
And so, if that's added with it, like it's supposed to be, then there wouldn't be any problem if they don't do that.
Right. So what you end up with is, you end up with this historic revisionism, where if you look back at what was going on in this country for the previous 200 years, it makes absolutely no sense in light of what people interpret the laws to mean today.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you can't explain American history. You have to basically say for the last 200 years, every judge and every congressman and everybody in government was a complete idiot, and now they're geniuses.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can believe that, then the way they're interpreting things today makes sense.
Yeah.
But when you go look at history, what you find is just the opposite. That the people in the past often were way wiser, smarter, more careful, more principled than what we have today. And that's why you get like even when I went to seminary and to school in Texas, they were issuing degrees in a seminary, and the state came along and said, no, you can't issue degrees unless you have secular accreditation and you teach, you know, Freud and all this Maslow and all this other stuff, right? So they took them to court, and well, it's a seminary, right? And so the school went to court, and after like 6-7 years, a long time, the school won. But the thing is, the first lowest court ruled against the school, the next higher court ruled against the school, and it went to the Supreme Court in Texas, and the Supreme Court guys in Texas, who are old, and who know what the Constitution's about, and they know what freedom of religion really is. They said, you guys at the lower courts, you're way off a line. You don't even understand what this country's based on. And they slapped them down. Hmm. Well, those guys are going to be dead in 5 or 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then where are we going
to
be?
Well, and then we had to matriculate to Louisiana to have, quote, degrees.
Yeah, so, but the point I'm making there is just to say that it's the same stuff that's going on with Bible interpretation, where the rules that people understood that it's the original intent of the writers that matters.
Mm-hmm.
That's getting eroded away, and so it allows for things to be completely reinterpreted, so that, like, if the original founders came back in a time machine, they would think this is Mars,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. The thing that bothers me a lot, too, though, is they blatantly lie about something. They'll come out later and say, we lied. And there's little to no, like the Iran deal or the Medicare or the Obamacare or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They completely lied, and they admit it now. And everybody went, well.
Well, everybody expects politicians to lie. They really do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they lie like crazy when they're running for office, and they get away with it. And they lie once they're in office. You know, I mean, it's just an expected thing.
But what I see that, though, as a big downfall.
Mm-hmm.
Just a big downfall. You can't, so that when they do that, you can't trust the elections.
Mm-hmm.
They already got somebody they want. You can't trust any of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and the problem there is just people don't expect more is part of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's
just start our own country.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Well, that's happened many times before, right?
Sure.
Where do you think the U.S. came from, right? But the people don't expect enough. People they're not upset about things when
mm-hmm.
they see it. You know, like I've talked about lots of times where these shepherds and pastors do this screwball thing, and two years later they're back at it again with a whole different people, twice
mm-hmm.
as big.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And where do all those people come from, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they all know about what happened before, but they don't care.
Yeah.
And where are the people that are in their face immediately?
Yeah.
They're not there.
Right.
Oh, we have to treat them with kid gloves because they're called of God.
Yeah, the Marceau guy, he's down in Arizona now, I think, with a big old starting a big old church.
Yeah. Baker is bigger than he ever was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, part of it is just what are we willing to put up with? You know, what are we as people willing to put up with? Don't we expect more? Because that is a part of it. I mean, people just kind of turn and roll over with whatever they're allowed.
It's years.
Yeah. So this whole business here, again, is this idea that, you know, God has communicated in His Word and through His prophets. And, you know, that's his first line. You know, okay, here's my word, here's my prophet, and he has a long patience. But, you know, when that doesn't work, then he starts saying, well, I'm going to bring a nation from the north, a nation of fierce
mm-hmm.
countenance that has a tongue you don't understand, and they're going to speak to you.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah. So, you see these things, and I think all of us, you know, it's a different setting, but we all see things in the news, like we were just talking about, you were talking about them trying to grow organs in the animal bodies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a doctor wants to transplant somebody's head to another body. You know, there's weird cloning stuff going on. People are, you know they're working on cloning a human being.
Sure.
There's all these, you know, official...
I bet they've got it.
It could be, I don't know.
Yeah,
but
on animals.
But when you see all those things, you know, there's a part of you, as a Christian, you go, well, you know, what is God going to allow? You know, how far can we poke? How many
mm-hmm.
times can you poke God in the
mm-hmm.
eye before he sneezes? Right? And blows the whole thing away. So there's a sense, you know, and I think every... You know, like, okay, this is a small thing, but to me, this speaks volumes, okay? We're in a little store in Bellingham a while back, and they're selling these little kid socks. And it's just, it's associated with a bookstore. It's a real nice store. There's nothing weird about the store. And the little little kid's socks, it's got some phrase about carpe diem in there, seize the day.
Mm-hmm.
But it says seize the F day, and the word F you, you know.
Yeah. As on the kid's socks.
Yeah, yes. Seize the effing carpe day, you know, day.
Yeah.
And this is on a pair of socks.
Yeah.
So they wouldn't even know what that Latin word is.
Yeah, they don't know what the Latin word is. But
the other words.
But my point is,
because their parents are buying it for them.
I just saw that on these socks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you see all these different things you think about. But that to me, that just was like, that was a trip line. I saw that and I go, what the heck?
No.
For lack of a better word.
The F-bomb, so to speak, was that in English?
Yeah.
Or was that in Latin as well?
No.
Okay.
No, straight out.
All right, guys.
F-U-C-K-I-N-G.
Yeah.
Right? Capital.
I'm not laughing at it.
Right on this sock,
yeah.
You know? And so the F word has gotten to be, I mean, in the last 3 or 4 years, it's gone from nothing to everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Every other word.
And people don't seem to, you know, and I feel like an old codger because, you know, it hits me on the head when I'm hearing it all the time. I mean, everywhere you go, restaurants, ferry boats, everywhere, it's just like, even in white-collar business meetings.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Is it in the faculty room now, Jeff? Or in the classroom?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And there's not kids.
And, you know, and so some people say, well, you know, what's the big deal? It's just a word, da-da-da. You know, people say geez, they say this, they say that. They don't really mean anything, but blah-blah-blah-blah-blah. But there was a time, you know, even like 10 years ago, that would have been really pretty unthinkable,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And think about Gone with the Wind. One word.
Yeah.
And that movie was not shown in how many cities because of that one word?
One swear word in it?
Damn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Frankly, Scarlett, I don't give a damn.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that
kept
movie was
it out
not
of,
allowed
wow,
to be shown in town.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So, so the thing that's weird is we're all products of our age, right?
Yeah.
And so there's a bunch of things that I accept, don't even think about, that people before me would be all offended about, probably,
right? Sure.
So you have to kind of keep that in mind, but still, you know, there's a lot of different words people use to express themselves, and some of these words though have real specific meanings, and this F word is one of them.
Oh, yeah.
And so when you see it on a little kid's sock, you know, and it reminded me on that same street, this was up in Bellingham and Fairhaven, which is great up there, but what was interesting just so happens is, like, I don't know, 3-4 months prior to that, I'd been standing outside that same store on that same section, and it just so happened it was there. It could have been anywhere. This mother was telling her little kid, I want you to do so-and-so. And this kid, this teeny little kid, turns around, you FF asshole, FF.
Really?
Just yelling, screaming at their parent with F-A-F.
Like 4 years old or something?
Teeny little demon.
Oh, yeah.
And And I was just like, I was like,
here's a bar of soap.
I was like,
don't get that dumb bar
out. You can't even spank your kid in public.
Well, that's part of the fruit of it, yeah. But I was so shocked.
That was
that's
shocking.
What they probably learned
I would
most
do
of
it. I would do it, but you can't do it.
Yeah.
I had a little kid to come over to the house there, and the 2-year-old, I probably got it from her sisters or her brother. She was going around saying poop all the time. It was a big dig to her, you know. And that kind of bothered me, just having this little kid learning something like that, you know. That I mean, that's just the beginning. I mean,
they're
just talking, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's I don't know, it's just not the same. And I know our morals are going in the tube.
So I think, though, you know, just to tie it in here again, is this idea that as we slide, there's big things and there's little things, you know. Like a big thing would be some of the stuff going on that's endorsing homosexual behavior, right, and, you know, gay flags all over the country and everything else. A little thing would be this F word on a sock, Although from God's perspective, I'm not so sure he thinks that's a little thing either. But
just ball it into one big ball.
Right. It's all connected. And so when you see this situation where he's communicated, when you have a nation where there's just, you know, it's not as prevalent now, but there's Bibles all over the place.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you know, the Bible is, if you had to pick one book that has had the largest influence on America and England and Canada, there's no contest. It's the Bible, right?
Sure.
And so, what does the Bible say about all this stuff? I mean, it's pretty straightforward. And then as you move away from that, yeah, you enter this situation whereas somebody who's has a heart for God and has a heart and cares about the country and people, the question keeps coming up every week in your mind is, how far can we go out on this diving board? Mm-hmm. How far can we go out on this branch before it snaps, right? And so you feel like, well, am I just an alarmist, you know, thinking
it's like getting slapped every time that something like that comes up.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they're, I don't know, shocking, it's flat, you know, it's like, it's not, I mean, I think James says something about using coarse language, you know. It's mm-hmm. in the Bible. We're not supposed to do that. It's, mm-hmm.
Well, speaking of the word, you know, in the Bibles and whatever, I just heard a thing that the main distributor that was shipping 25,000 Bibles a day to different bookstores, like the Shabama store or whatever, they are shutting down. And mm-hmm. so there's all these vendors, 125 of them out of 500 are affected, that they can't get their product to market unless they go through Amazon. And they said, well, all these people are buying their Bibles through Amazon, da da da. And I'm going, how many people are really doing that? You mm-hmm. know, and how many Bibles will now not be distributed?
Mm-hmm.
So all the stores, you know, Christian Family Store goes bankrupt, right? And that shuts down. those orders aren't coming through, then the distributor's shutting down, the middle guy. The vendors now are going to probably go out of business, some of them. It's kind of, you know, our the word of God is getting shrunk
mm-hmm.
to being out there in the marketplace. Not only the Christian bookstores, you know, Zondervan, mm-hmm. which is a secular publisher, you know, and it's all money related. So we're shrinking.
So I think,
and that's just happened three days ago.
Yeah.
So I think the message really, that the message, if you really boil all this down, this stuff is, it's not going to be business as usual.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a fundamental shift going on. I mean, it's been in degrees, but I think we're reaching mm-hmm. a point where there's a fundamental shift going on where Christianity in the next 20 years is going to be fundamentally different, the challenges and the situation, than it was for our last 20 years. And I think we need to get a hold of that in our minds.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And realize that this is not, we're not in the same place that we're used to being. We're used to being in a place where we read about how weird and hard it is for other Christians in other parts of the world, but we don't have to deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have to change our mindset to start thinking, okay, we are going to have to deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
Because things are changing so rapidly that it'd be naive for us to think that it's going to stay the same. We have to just get used to it. Instead, we have to step up to the plate and just get to the point of realizing, well, you know, it's going to be different for us.
Yeah. Every time something happens in the United States with one of these terrorist things or whatever happens, you know, somebody brings up Christianism. I mean, something about Christians. I mean,
Orlando, it's Christians that actually caused it.
Well, it was homosexuals,
mm-hmm.
you know, a homosexual gay bar, and so Christians hate gays, you know, that's what people
right.
think, and so, you know, it's definitely there,
mm-hmm.
and it's